music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning and happy Wednesday. Welcome to Intravenous on Campus Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from the unceded and ancestral territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I'm Robin, and I am bringing you an interview that I did with a couple of members of the cast from Coven, which is a brand new documentary on witchcraft that was made and produced by Canadian feminist director Rama Rao. I have Laura Hochstad on the show. Laura is a queer Toronto-based art director and tarot card reader. She is also the host of the YouTube series on Rue Morgue TV called Terror Tarot, where she analyzes the use of tarot cards in horror films. Laura has always had a strong interest in the occult and magic. And through the use of tarot cards and her solitary practice, Laura searches for a deeper understanding of herself and those around her. I'm also joined for the conversation with Andra Zaletscu, who is a Romanian musician, performer, illustrator, and tarot reader. Andra is passionate about creation that serves to act as a spell to open the doorways by honoring the land, their ancestors, and traditions. She plays and sings saw and guitar in the band Willow Switch and loves to create haunting, ethereal, doomy folk music. Andra's witchcraft practice is rooted in reclaiming her ancestral practice and learning to walk the roads of her ancestry. We're going to jump into that interview right now here on Intravenous. Okay, thanks for joining me today on the show. Let's begin with a Coles Notes or a synopsis of the Canadian documentary film Coven and some of the themes underpinning the story.
Sure. So the film directed by Rama Rao, who in all of her work previously has always kind of looked at the world through like a feminist lens. So I would say that the first part of Coven is really an examination of witchcraft and feminism, and it follows three different women and their journey through discovering what witchcraft means to them, like socially, culturally, and historically as well. That's kind of how I would describe it.
Yeah, of which Laura and myself and Leilani are, and I think it also really explores the relationship between the past moving into the present of how witchcraft has been related to feminism and specifically women stepping into their power.
That's such a great synopsis because it's also going to sort of point to some other questions that I have and is nicely relatable. So thank you. I want to ask you both individually, what brought you to the craft and how would you personally describe witchcraft?
So for me, it was definitely being raised with my grandmother and also my father's stories, and a lot of them were folklore, a lot of them were fairy tales, but at the root of them was this worldview that everything is sacred, everything is alive, magic is everywhere. And so I had the absolute like luck and honor and privilege to never have to be raised out of those beliefs. They were prevalent in my family everywhere. So I never had to dissociate from that magical way of thinking and then come back to it and reestablish it. So I really feel like it's always been a part of me.
Amazing. I feel like for myself, witchcraft has really been very personal. And like I talk about in the documentary as well, pretty closely tied to my identity as a queer person as well. I feel like when I was younger and exploring kind of witchcraft on my own, I was just trying to like figure it out as I went and just kind of following my instincts. And then it wasn't till later where I was like, oh, maybe what I'm doing is part of this practice, and it's something bigger than, just me like running around in the forest, like collecting things and, doing these little rituals that I didn't even really know I was creating. So I've always felt like witchcraft for me was very like introspective because I was mostly a solitary practitioner. But I think as I've explored my practice more, it's felt quite a bit more empowering and kind of like transgressive almost as well.
Great, thank you. On this show, with specifically Intravenous, we focus on exploring gender expression through an intersectional feminist lens. What does witchcraft offer us in our understanding of gender and gender roles and the binary of masculine and feminine? I know that sounds like a big question.
This is a tricky question, and part of the reason why I feel it's a tricky question is that in the 1960s, when Wicca was becoming really prevalent, and a lot of these more ceremonial magical systems were becoming really popular and within the social cultural gaze, binary masculine and feminine roles within magic were such a part of those traditions. And so approaching those traditions and those communities that were established around that time and have been ongoing, and entering in dialogue with them in present day, as a non-binary, as a non-binary person, or as a queer person, or as someone who carries many different worlds within them and holds them all equally real, equally true, wants them all to have the space to exist and manifest in the world. That becomes a more difficult conversation because I think witchcraft will always also represent kind of the values and the worldview of the people practicing it. So we enter into that dialogue with the older views of like the elders within that community. And also, it's our role to challenge those things. And in that way, witchcraft grows with us, and continues to be relevant and continues to be powerful and present, but only when we actually challenge a lot of those limiting beliefs that exist everywhere. It's not just a matter of because you carry this alternative identity, you're necessarily not going to carry your cultural bias in your practice, whether you want to or don't want to. So I think the most powerful thing is continuing to dismantle those systems, which even if our mind doesn't believe them, sometimes we carry them within our body and within ourselves and within our worldview and how we approach these alternate spaces or magical discussions or different ways of being. And so continuing to challenge that, I feel, is part of what makes witchcraft really powerful. Because it's always been tied to non-normative identities, but I feel like each generation creates space for what would have before been considered non-normative. And so we have to keep pushing against that and pushing against it.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't really say I can add anything to that, Andra. That was like beautifully said. I think I definitely agree. I think now the way that we're seeing maybe like modern witchcraft kind of manifest is that it's kind of taking a step out of this like patriarchal kind of mindset or rules or expectations, because it kind of seeks to like empower individuals and their self-expression. I think we're kind of moving away from that, but I definitely agree there are like traditions and ways of being that even it, within witchcraft have to be questioned and dismantled, like you so eloquently said.
I love in that answer how it points to the practice of the craft being such a living, breathing phenomenon, you know, rather than this very staid, and this is what it looks like, and this is what it has always looked like, therefore this is what it will always look like. And that there's this real fluidity to me, which in my understanding of, you know, how the masculine and the feminine energies work, right? The feminine energy is that fluid creatrix, more chaotic almost, energy. And so there is a bit of a definition in terms of, you know, how it, how witchcraft might speak to the feminine a little bit stronger, just energetically. That's just my take on it.
And to respond to that, I think we often talk about creator, like creation, but I think the other aspect of that is destroyer too. And I think like part of women's power, you know, to speak of it in that way is like the creator, destroyer, destroyer, creator. And so when you ask me, what is witchcraft to me? Well, witchcraft is claiming our capacity to create. But in order to create, we have to carry that duality of destroying what is not serving us in order to have the space for manifesting the world that we dream of. And within our sphere of influence, you know, whether that's a couple of people or a whole community, each of us has the capacity to create the world as we want to see it everywhere, to treat people the way we think everybody should be treating each other. And so creating our own little, like, you know, like utopias, really. And I feel like creating those worlds around us makes them inhabitable. And that's actually how we change the future and exercise our magic and exercise our power, because maybe your sphere of influence starts at really, really small. And it's just you and your cat, and you treat your cat with integrity, and you treat your cat with grace, and you make sure that cat is loved and fed. But I think you start to build those relationships of like alignment with your mind, body, your spirit, your integrity, and then your sphere of influence starts to grow, and it starts to grow, and it starts to grow. And that's what it means to claim our power, is to claim our capacity as world creators, world builders, and also world destroyers for the worlds that are not feeding our spirits or healthy for us or serving our communities.
Our listening audience can't see it, but I'm nodding along to what you're saying, and Laura too. Yeah, that's such a nice segue into this next question that I have. There was an article by Anne Theriault called "The Real Reason." Women Love Witches, which was published in Medium. And she says, sort of tongue in cheek, it's not about broomsticks or cats, it's about power. And you started to really talk about this, Andra, but what does the power look like to you, if you want to elaborate on it, and if you want to chime in, Laura?
Well, I looked up the article just in advance because I was curious to see what else Anne was saying about it. And I mean, I do kind of agree it is a little bit about cats, at least for me, just because I have two and I love them. And but in all seriousness, at the beginning of the article, she kind of talks about this girlhood experience that I related to. It was kind of like she speaks about going to sleepovers and having this group of young girls together, and they're, you know, kind of practicing different types of divination, even like in a, you know, in a childish way, you know, maybe doing like a seance or trying to talk through a Ouija board, all of these like sleepover kind of cliches. But I really think that speaks to why young girls and young children, I think, or young people are drawn to witches as a source of power, because it's this group of people who really don't feel very empowered at that stage of life, and you're searching for that power and control in your own way. And I think that's why it's so appealing to young girls or young people, because you're kind of searching for that. And I feel like that kind of follows you into adulthood, at least for myself. And I feel like it is, you know, that ongoing search for, you know, personal empowerment. And I think I definitely find that through my practice.
Anything to add, Andra, about power and what that looks further to you?
To add a little bit to that, I do think it's stepping into your power and not being afraid of, you know, like what we would consider the more dangerous aspects of power, like anger, for example. Like anger can burn things down. Anger can be a boundary setter. Anger can be a protector. And so I think part of witchcraft is really learning to claim all aspects of your power, to be comfortable with your shadow aspects, to hold all of those worlds as true and equal, and to ground yourself in all of them, and therefore like access your full power. And I see this modern trend that I think we have to be really careful of, you know, which witchcraft is really popular right now, and it's really popular right now also as a form of like edgy consumerism. And what ends up happening is, you know, this movement that's really meant to empower, especially, you know, like you said, Laura, like often young insecure women at an age where they're learning who they are, can be just as disempowering when what it's doing is saying, you know, I'll sell you a spell or I'll sell you a candle that will like solve your anxiety or solve your depression or like, you know, fix the problems in your life. Because the problem with a lot of traditional religion is it adds an intermediary between you and your truth. And so the only teachers you should follow are the ones that bring you back to your heart. And it's not about, you know, buying the right stuff or buying the right tools or looking the right way, because we used to live in a world, you know, there's also separation between witchcraft and like animism. Like many of us used to live in a world where everything was sacred, you know, magic was everywhere. We all honor the land and held those relationships really, really strong within us. And so there's absolutely no reason, I feel, to not walk those paths now and to not have those direct experiences with the sacred and what we would consider magic, what we would consider miracles. And so being really, really careful of like what intermediaries we put between ourselves and the experience of the sacred.
But it's so easy to want someone else to solve our problems for us.
Yes, very true.
Well, and as a tarot reader too, like one of the things I'm always trying to remind people is, you know, you carry your truth with you. If I tell you anything that doesn't resonate with you at all, don't listen to me, because ultimately the only reason I'm able to read these truths is because that person walked through my door already carrying and like deep somewhere in their spirit already knowing those things and seeking their own healing and seeking their own growth. And so, yeah, like even when you're given those opportunities where you can really, you know, tell someone, or you're given power in their life where you can tell them if something's right or wrong, like really holding that as like a deeply ethical thing of like always bringing it back to their power and their truth and what feels right to them.
Yeah, I completely agree, because I also read tarot, and I say it's similar things to anyone who comes through for reading. It's like whatever resonates with you, take that. And I also say like tarot isn't going to, you know, like predict the future or give you lottery numbers or, you know, all these things that people think it will. But what it will do is like help you kind of shine light onto, like you said, Andra, to your own truths and what you kind of already know. It just helps guide you, maybe if you're unsure of that path, but you've got it in here.
I know a little, well, probably a little more than a little bit about astrology, and I've heard it say that people speak their chart. You know, and it's what you're both saying about those truths that live within us and live within our hearts. There's only so much we can do to mask those. As much or as hard as we try, sometimes they still shine through. And you know, if someone says something that really rings, we feel it, you know, we know it to be the case. On a similar note, and sort of going back and quoting another woman, Erica Feldman, is the proprietor of House Witch, which is a shop in Salem, Massachusetts. And she says that for her, the initials witch stand for woman in total control of herself. And I'm just wondering how that acronym resonates with you, and what have been the touch points of gaining this self-control in your own journeys?
For me, I found like it's a funny acronym. I think that's cool that it lines up that way. And I think certainly for Erica as a business owner, I think like in Salem and making this huge empire of House Witch, like that acronym definitely resonates. I think I heard her say in an interview too that just even taking back the word witch is kind of like a radical feminist act, and I definitely feel that way as well. But personally, I don't know if it was self-control that I was really searching for in my journey anyway. It was more like self-acceptance. So, you know, as like I say, I love that it's that acronym, but I found for myself it wasn't so much self-control. It was more about introspection, self-acceptance, self-reflection, and finding that power within more so.
Yeah, I actually really kind of disagreed with that definition. And I find it, I think, like this very like the idea of control over yourself or over things around you, like is often this very top-down power, right? It's your mind over matter, your logic often over your emotions or your intuition. And I think it's also part of this really almost like capitalist worldview of each person as this individual subject, you know, separate from community, separate from the land, separate from, you know, like the bigger waves of like energy or experience that a lot of us tend to share. And so while each of us does have, I believe, our own gifts that we've come here to share and our own frequency that we put out into the world, and these are the reasons, you know, we've come here, in my belief. Yeah, I don't think that it's that separate from the rest of the world or the rest of creation. And I think trying to control things is often a fear-based response. And the harder thing is accepting and allowing yourself to be a part of all of these beautiful relationships that we find ourselves in.
I can't help think about the spot in the documentary where the high priestess says there's just a few rules to witchcraft, and one of them, or you know, one of the most salient ones, is that it's a benevolent dictator, that there's no contradicting the goddess, and that idea of, you know, that we could have control over ourselves, and how that could ever trump the higher sacred or more divine understanding of, you know, who's really in charge here.
It's tricky. You have the sacred within and the sacred without, and the goddess within and the goddess without. And so, Yeah, I feel like our inner and our outer worlds reflect each other in that. And I know the priestess who said that, you know, is coming at it from this very like Wiccan, like more hierarchical view of things as well. Yeah, Laura, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, through the experience in the doc too, just seeing how different people have do their practice and how it's very, you know, like for that specific high priestess, like you said, very Wiccan influence, and it is very structured in kind of that traditional way that we might see another type of religion within like an institution and kind of this top-down type of thing. But I think that that's one specific person's practice and their beliefs. And I think the beautiful thing about witchcraft as a whole is that you can kind of, there's so many different avenues that you can go down. And then I think just looking for mentors and looking for other folks who more so share your beliefs, and then, you know, finding more of a community and a connectedness is what spoke to me. So that is kind of where I found myself lying. But you know, certainly there are some more structured belief systems even within witchcraft.
Yeah, and the only teachers you should follow are the ones that guide you back to your heart. And I think that's one of the most powerful lessons I've been taught by any of my teachers, because nothing should be an intermediary between you and your own sense of truth.
Yeah, completely agree. Absolutely.
I'm talking to two of the cast members, from the documentary Coven, Laura Hogstad and Andra Zletskew. And I know that both of you brought a song to share with our audience. I'm going to invite you to introduce the songs that we're going to hear, and then we'll be back to continue our conversation. Who wants to share their song first?
I'll go first. The song that I brought and chose is the song Memory from Witch Prophet, who is also a subject within our documentary. Leilani is a queer Toronto-based artist, and this song is from her most recent album called Gateway Experience, and it was also produced by her wife Sun Sun. So I hope everyone enjoys it.
Is there something wrong?
The song I've chosen, it is my birthday, so I'm going to shamelessly plug my own band, Willow Switch. So this is a song called Cut Wood, Carry Water, and it's about exploring our ancestry as it leads us into the crossroads of the present and how we carry those traditions forward into the future.
Thank you for those two musical suggestions. We're talking about the Canadian-made documentary Coven. And in the documentary, there is a scene that addresses coming out as a witch. What has been your experience of the process or What has been your experience, or what has been the process of stepping into this self-identification? And do you have any words of wisdom for others who are exploring their own connections to witchcraft?
So the most resistance I actually have ever gotten is from my own family. They have a very traditional worldview of a lot of these things and a lot of negative associations. And so that has been the major fight back for me. And it's quite odd because it occurred as a result of the documentary. In the sense that I've been moving through my life and through the world, you know, as a witch and identifying in that way for a long time, but I tend to not invite people into those vulnerable aspects of myself unless I know that they can honor them. And I think having something as public as a documentary of your spiritual practice and exploration of that invites a lot of voices that you wouldn't have necessarily like invited into your vulnerability, into those conversations. And I think it shows it in a really visceral way. Because you're not just telling, but you're showing. And so I got a lot of initial resistance. Like when the documentary was coming out, you know, my mother told me I'm not a witch and what am I doing? And then after seeing it and being invited into those spaces in that way, I think she understood better what witchcraft means and was actually really proud of me. And it was really sweet that she gained a broader understanding of that. In that way, but I think it was difficult to navigate the biases, especially coming from people who have decided that they know you in a very particular way.
For myself, I think for the longest time, you know, it was almost easier for me to tell people I was a witch than to come out as gay. So it was almost like, you know, I think my family and friends have, you know, jokingly referred to me as a witch since, I mean, I talk about it in the documentary, but in when I was in high school, there was a rumor that went around that I was a witch and a lesbian, and it turned out that both were true. I hate that the bullies were right, but it was almost like when I started to really own my identity as a witch, it was much earlier before I came out. And I think for me, it was kind of like, because they're so tied for me, it was almost like a little bit of a soft launch of my queer identity. It's like, okay, so I'll say I'm a witch, and who accepts me for that? Who is okay with it? And, you know, okay, well now maybe I can take that next step and to reveal another part of who I am. But yeah, that second part did take a lot longer.
So interesting and challenging that sometimes our families can be our biggest supporters, but also our biggest obstacles to get back to ourselves. Because as you say, Andra, there's, you know, these preconceived expectations and notions about, you know, who they want us to be rather than who we want to show up as.
Crazy how much my family has informed my belief system and my practice, but it's one of those things where the moment you speak it, it becomes dangerous. And I think that's also its power. I think that's the power of witchcraft, is our words have power. You know, our words are spells, they're chants, they're songs, they're world changing. And when you step in your power and actually speak your truth, like, it is dangerous because it does have the ability to change the world around you. And in the case of my family, they were revolutionaries, like against the oppressive communist regime in Romania. So they were raised that the way you keep yourself safe is you don't speak your opinion, you don't speak your truth, you hide, you try to be like everybody else. So you may carry these beliefs, but the fact that I'm speaking them, I think brings up a lot of that in them. A lot of those beliefs around like the best way to protect our children and keep them safe is to make sure that they're also hiding in those ways so they're not in danger. And I think that was the really big challenge between me and my family and the ways that they kept themselves safe and the way that I keep myself safe by not holding things inside my body and learning to speak my truth so that it doesn't burn me up.
I guess, Laura, I'm curious about your perspective on this because there's ancestral history for you there, right? Where in the documentary you discover that you're related to a couple of witches who have been hung, and that, we carry this cellular ancestral somatic knowing about things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like that was such a like a shock to the system when we discovered that I not only had like one ancestor in Salem who was persecuted as a witch, but then to find out also in if I trace my family back further in Scotland that that same thing had happened, almost around the same time. I think initially it was like it was shocking, it made me angry, it made, because when we think about the witch trials that were going on all over, the world, Europe and America, between 14 to 1700s. I think I read somewhere that it was like 40 to 50,000 people during that time were killed for that. It just, I mean, I think you do carry that with you. I think you carry your ancestors' energies and their memories are kind of like a ripple in your mind. I had a profound experience of doing a past life regression where I didn't even expect. I didn't know what was going to happen, but then to really feel like I tapped into those feelings of the ancestors and how they were feeling at that time, it was really profound and sad and scary, but also kind of, there was a part where it's like, okay, so I've always been feeling this way to have to trace that lineage back to feel like, okay, so that it's for a reason, there's something there that really made me connect to it because I was always I think we're our harshest critic. I was like, oh, I don't have any space in this world. I don't deserve to be here. I'm not, what I imagined sh I should be to be able to say that I'm a witch. But that part, as hard as it was a bit validating, I guess, in a sadder, a sad way, I guess.
Again, such a nice segue into my next question. And that, when I was thinking just culturally about the preconceived ideas and notions of what witches are, what they may or may not do, how they may or may not look, how have your own presumptions or biases shifted? In general, but also specifically about being part of this documentary.
For me, it really deeply validated, similar to what Laura was saying, that we carry our own truth and we carry our knowledge and we carry our ancestry and it lives in our body. So even if we're not within our mind, logically, rationally aware of where those messages or feelings come from, so often your instinct remembers. And biologically, we're made of our ancestors. Ancestral memory is part of what informs us. And so we have access to this knowledge, even if our head may not know it. We're still responding from, not just our environment that formed us, but things much, much older than that. And so moving through this documentary, and meeting all of these people who consider themselves powerful witches or witchcraft elders or heads of their tradition. And it was an honor to meet all of them. But I think it also draws a lot of focus onto what the more like performative elements of that can be. And I keep saying this, but the only teachers that should guide you are the ones that bring you back to your own truth. Because ultimately, like it was very validating. I went to Romania and I met this beautiful family of witches, and they practice traditionally. They're actually the only Romani clan where the women are the ones who work predominantly, and they work as witches, and they work in witchcraft, and they do rituals, they do spells, they do palm readings, blessings, curses, all of that. And they don't actually believe that there is good or bad magic. They believe that you should be able to do all of it, but then you can choose what you do. You know, you decide your path by making those choices of what you're willing to practice and not practice when other people come and make those asks for you. And so to be really unexpectedly actually initiated into their coven and brought into working with them and to get to see and experience a lot of these things firsthand, I think what it also really taught me is that, you know, I'm my own worst critic. I'm the one with the biggest imposter syndrome, and the people like outside of me don't see that. And even after they were all like so validating and they were so like, oh no, you're here because you're supposed to be here, because it's ancestral, because clearly the universe brought you here. You know, I'm the one who's like still carrying all of these doubts and feelings. And so going back to like in the tarot, you know, there's the devil card, and the devil is hell is our own creation, and we're responsible for the chains that bind us. You know, you can like go to the ends of the world and have like other people like sing your praises or validate you or like include you in the heart of their community and like meet you with trust and welcoming and these beautiful things. And you can still like carry those same old beliefs around yourself. And so, you know, the alchemical change, the witchcraft, the magic and all of that is like actually slowly, slowly like growing and healing those belief systems we carry within us that limit our own power and our own capacity to like share our gifts with the world and with our communities, and like in reciprocity of like honoring other people's gifts and becoming stronger in that way, I think.
Do you want to add to that, Laura?
I completely agree, especially when, I mean, and I said it a bit earlier too, when we talk about this like imposter syndrome for me as well, I was like, you know, when I got to go through and do that ceremony with one of the high priestesses, it was an overwhelming experience. It was not anything I ever expected to do, but it was really, it was wonderful to see how they do their practice. And then, you know, to be able to meet other practitioners, you know, and to be able to connect with like Andra as well and talk about, you know, that it doesn't, you know, have to be this one specific way of practicing was really helpful for me to know, you know, the way that I've felt connected to nature and the way that I've practiced, there are other folks who do it that way as well. So that was just validating. And then again, going back to finding this heritage within my family of people who had been accused of witchcraft, it was a connectedness to the past and to my practice, and it just like brought everything kind of all together and made me feel a lot more confident in holding that identity in that space.
These are all such rich answers. Oh my goodness. It's just it's wonderful. And it's so much of what you've said already also touches on the questions that I formulated for our conversation. But I'm wondering if there's more to add to this, because I think so much of what we think about ourselves and the past is deeply rooted in white, male, cisgendered myth and white supremacy. How do you see the ways that witchcraft seeks to interrupt this, reframe outdated notions of who we are and who we can be?
One thing that comes up for me with that would be just if we think, just going back to the witch trials as well, and how that basically stems from men's fear of women in power and wanting to control women. You know, the people who were accused of witchcraft during all that time were healers. They were leaders in their community. They were women who possibly spoke up, or what I learn is a woman may have had property that a man wanted. So I think it's just like within witchcraft and that lobbing of that word and using it in this way, you know, I feel like men throughout history have done that to try and disempower women. So I think there's a way of, there's something that they fear there. And I think it is women coming together, being in their power and just, you know, existing in this way. So I think that witchcraft in itself is trying to disrupt that kind of patriarchal view of who's in power and who isn't.
Yeah, and of us as dependents, right? Dependence on men, dependence on the system, dependence on the government, whatever it may be. Like once you claim, and I feel like, you know, like a lot of spiritual traditions and even modern spiritual traditions, and also like the media too, it's a lot of escapism. It's a lot of, you know, transcending your present moment, like leaving your body, you know, and for me, it was always like, well, I don't need help dissociating. I do that really easily. You know, I want my spiritual practice to be something that helps bring me into my bones and bring me into the present. And so the more you do that, you know, and like, for me, it's also recognizing how deeply my body is rooted in relationship to the land. The less you are dependent on other people. You know, you can be part of community, you can share of your gifts, but you are like whole and complete unto yourself. You know, you don't need like a man or whatever to validate your existence, and worthwhile. And I think that's also why witchcraft is so threatening.
And it's like, I just going back to the accusations that were, you know, thrown at women too. I was reading that, you know, if you're an old woman and you're unmarried, oh, then you could get this, you know, accusation of witchcraft. And but at the same time, if you were a young girl who was attractive and like, you know, the man felt like you were casting a spell on them, you know, it's just like all these things that, you know, it was at that time, it was, you know, the result would be hanging in this accusation of witchcraft. But very much so, those ideas are still there today. It's like, oh, an unmarried older woman is, you know, just thrown away kind of in the way that society, especially patriarchal society, regards them, and young women as well, seen as this like temptress, when it's like, no, maybe they're just existing and you guys just need to stop being so creepy about it.
Reminds me of the speech in the Barbie movie where I can't remember what the actress's name is or the character's name, but she's the human mom, and
America Ferrera.
Yes. Anyways, she's like, we do this, we do that, we do this, we do that, we do this, we do that. We just can't win, right? It's someone is going to find some kind of ridiculous fault about being in this flesh that we're in somehow. Just a couple of minutes left in our conversation, and has the documentary been officially released? And if so, where can people see it? And if not, when and how will the public have access?
We have found out that it is going to be broadcast on CBC like TV on Sunday, January 28th at 8 p.m. And then it will start to stream on their streaming service Gem after, or on the same day. So you'll be able to watch it through streaming on Gem or tuning in on CBC on January 28th at 8.
And the documentary channel too. I think it's being released on all of them simultaneously. And then after that will be available for public streaming for the next couple of years.
Fantastic. Any last words, things that I didn't quite touch on that you want to mention before our time is out?
Not that I can think of. I've really enjoyed the discussion, and these questions were just like amazing and really fun to kind of think about prior to coming to speak with you. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you for your questions. They were really deep and they made me have to sit and really think about what I wanted to say, and I really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. I like to just really dig into things and, try to parse out where the real meaning lies in things. I'm not so much for the just give me a 5 minute sound bite, but let's really explore this and see where it takes us. So I appreciate your time and also your answers. They were very thoughtful and thought-provoking, and hopefully our audience members think the same way. Thank you, Laura and Andra, for your time. Laura Hogstad and Andra Zletsky, who are a couple of the cast members from the documentary that was made called Coven, which you can see streaming on CBC Gem. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned for Democracy Now!, which is coming up right after this.